You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
If you think your Thanksgiving is going to be awkward, if you are already dreading November, and it's never too soon to start dreading November. If you think any of your Thanksgivings have ever been awkward, make a mental note, or better yet, set a Google Calendar alert so you'll remember to spare a thought and maybe save an extra slice of pecan pie for Will Sanderson, a gay man who lives in Los Angeles. Will's dad, Bill Sanderson, is a state representative in Tennessee, first elected to office in 2011. The elder Sanderson is proudly pro-life and pro-family, according to his campaign website. He joined the legislature to preserve the values that have defined our families for generations. While in office, Representative Sanderson has voted to block bans on discrimination against gay people. He's condemned same-sex marriage. He's attacked gay parents. His vote actually helped nullify an anti-discrimination statute in Nashville because Republicans believe in small government and local control. Up until local governments start raising the minimum wage or banning discrimination against queer people. Representative Sanderson has also advanced legislation attacking trans people and pushed through a bill that would allow licensed therapists to turn away gay clients and anyone else who offends their religious beliefs. Personally, I wouldn't want to see an anti-gay shrink myself, but the pro-gay pickings may be pretty slim in Tennessee. Anyway, it must have been awkward for adult gay Will to head home and hang out with anti-gay Bill at Thanksgiving. But Thanksgivings at the Sandersons just got a hell of a lot more awkward. The elder Sanderson resigned from the Tennessee State Legislature late last week to spend more time with his family. No, wait, I got that wrong. He says he resigned last week to spend more time with his winery. That's a new one. And it's just a coincidence that Representative Sanderson resigned the same week, practically the same day, that Tennessee political journalist Carrie Wade Gervin reported that, can you guess? Anti-gay state rep, anti-gay voting record, can you guess where we are headed? Anyone out there who guessed headed for Grindr got it right. Not only was Representative Sanderson trawling Grindr for dick, allegedly, and Bill Sanderson denies it, but Gervin reports that this has been going on for years and has pretty much been an open secret. In addition to sending out his nudes and engaging in chats and, according to some of the people Gervin spoke with, arranging actual hookups, this family values conservative has been telling gay men on Grindr that his marriage was open as far back as 2013. And he was, of course, talking about his second marriage. No word on whether this family values crusader's first marriage, which ended in divorce, was open or not. Now, this is nothing new. Homophobic politicians getting caught with their hands in the cocky jar or their mouths wrapped around it. That happens at such a clip you practically need an Excel spreadsheet to keep the fuck up. I mean, does anyone besides me remember anti-gay Ohio State Rep. Wesley Goodman, who had to resign after he got caught fucking a dude in his Senate office? Or anti-gay Oklahoma State Senator Ralph Shorty, who had to resign after getting caught in a motel room with a 17-year-old boy? Or North Dakota State Rep. Randy Boning, yes, Boning, who had to resign after he got caught sending nude photos to men on Grindr? Now, in fairness, not every anti-gay state politician who's forced to resign got caught in a gay sex scandal. Iowa Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix, crusader for family values Bill Dix, and a man whose last name is Dix, he had to resign after he was caught on camera hooking up with a female lobbyist. A straight sex scandal for a guy named Dix. I don't know how the irony gods could ignore that low-hanging fruit. Anyway, Will Sanderson isn't the only gay person on the planet with homophobic parents. Far from it. Lots of gay men and women have to navigate relationships with people we can't help but love who are homophobic. Thanksgiving is tricky enough when your dad is a homophobe. Thanksgiving is even trickier when your dad is an anti-gay elected official who votes against your fundamental human rights whenever he gets a chance. And I imagine Thanksgiving is infinity tricky when you find out your homophobic anti-gay elected official dad with the anti-gay voting record had to resign after he got caught looking for down-and-dirty guy-to-guy play on Grindr, allegedly. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Lucian.com. Twice as long, more guests, no ads. Lucian Greaves, co-founder and spokesperson for the Satanic Temple, joins us for what is episode 666 of the Savage Lovecast. Greaves is witty, he's charming, his political activism makes you think and laugh and think some more. Not only do we talk to Greaves about his work with the Satanic Temple, we also asked him to weigh in on some of your dilemmas, including, and you're going to want to sit down for this, the co-founder of the Satanic Temple tackling your wedding questions. All coming up today on the Savage Lovecast. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Honey, the smart shopping assistant that saves you time and money when you're shopping online. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by OMG Yes, a website where you explore the latest science about women's sexual pleasure through fun, honest videos. Get more understanding, more pleasure, and more tools for an even happier relationship. Get a discount on newly released season 2 at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, my boyfriend and I have been in a long-term, 5-year open relationship that's been really healthy for us, and we've had a lot of fun and enjoyed ourselves until today. I had informed my partner that I started seeing someone who was stimulating stuff that he just couldn't mentally, and my partner was like, okay, and then I let him know that I was having him up to the house that I was house sitting at to spend a couple days with me, which my partner said okay to. When I was at the house with this guy, my partner sent me a barrage of texts saying how I was breaking the rules, how this was unfair, how he was sitting at home, and how I was fucking this guy. And all he could think about was that. And he said, if you don't make him leave immediately, this relationship is over. I told him that I discussed this very clearly with him, and he knew that this was happening, and I wasn't going to ask this guy to leave. He'd driven like 3 hours to come up and see me. Over a lot of drama, my partner ended up driving to the house. Luckily, I was not there. Screamed, "Where the fuck are you? Where the fuck are you?" And then proceeded to take pictures of the house that I am taking care of, who happened to be my boss's house, and pictures of their bed that I had sex with this guy in, and send it to my boss. This was very dramatic to me, and my partner has never behaved in such an irrational manner, though obviously my bosses are legitimately very upset with me. I'd love to know what you think I should do here. Obviously, I deeply regret sleeping in their bed and having sex, and also having a guy come up to sleep and having him sleep in their bed with us. But this is just a really fucked situation, and I'd love your input on it.
Sounds like a really fucked up situation. That's my input. Sounds like a relationship extinction level event. Doesn't sound like something that you two can come back from, this violation of your trust and this attempt to punish you for what? You guys are 5 years into an open relationship. You say it's been healthy and happy and functional all this time. I don't want to point a finger at you at all. The only thing that you mentioned that may have been different about this particular person is you told your boyfriend that he pleasured you in ways or hit you in places and touched you in spots that your boyfriend couldn't. And maybe your boyfriend had some huge meltdown about feeling inadequate or replaced or suddenly feeling competitive around this particular guy at this particular time in a way he hasn't in the past. None of that makes what he did okay. And I don't think any of that makes what he did excusable. Breaking into that house, taking pictures of the bed, sending those pictures, including the bed that you fucked in, to your boss, from your house sitting, potentially costing you your job, getting you in trouble in this way. Yeah, I think that is the end of this relationship. And maybe there are some lessons to learn here. When you're in an open relationship, you're having great sex with someone new, you want to be sensitive to your partner's feelings. And it may be true that sex with your new partner is exciting and thrilling in new and different ways, and maybe there's some things that they do better than your partner ever did or could. That's not information your partner needs to know, and that may be information, if shared, that makes it hard for your partner to be at peace in this open relationship. I've often said that when it comes to our parents, we need to run them on a need-to-know basis. Maybe with our partners in open relationships, there's a little bit of need-to-knowing that has to go on, a little bit of good judgment that we have to demonstrate. And maybe your partner doesn't need to know that this person gives better blowjobs than anyone else you've ever been with. Maybe the considerate thing to do, using blowjobs as an example, maybe the considerate thing to do is to omit that unnecessary detail. Keep your mouth shut and enjoy the blowjob without rubbing your partner's nose in what they may perceive as their inadequacy, or they may perceive as your perception of their inadequacy. Again, not attempting to pin the blame on you, just want to, you know, we always want to learn the lessons when we leave a relationship going forward. And this may be a lesson that you need to learn. The lesson your boyfriend or ex-boyfriend needs to learn is that driving 3 hours up to this house where a girlfriend is house sitting and breaking in and taking pictures and sending those pictures to her boss for whom she was house sitting and an attempt to get her fired to punish her for having sex in the context of their open relationship, that is inexcusable. And that got him dumped.
Hey, Dan, I'm a gay man living in the Northwest. And the reason why I'm calling is because I ran into something completely fucking horrifying. I was house sitting my parents' house and I turned on the computer and there were two icons that came up. And I don't know if like my Bluetooth was on my phone or something like that, or if it like synced into the computer, but I clicked on it and basically it was all the pictures of every single guy on Manhunt that I've associated with. And like half of them were provocative pictures, like, or nude pictures or whatever. But anyway, it scared the living shit out of me. Like, why the fuck would that be in my parents' fucking computer? Do you think it's synced in with my phone? But these were all people that I've like talked to like a long time ago on Manhunt, and I just don't understand why the fuck that was on my parents' computer. I have gone on Manhunt on my parents' computer in the past, but I don't understand why, like, the fuck all that shit showed up. Anyways, do I bring this up to my parents, or do you think it's a hack or something that's fucked up, like, with my phone? I don't know what to do. Like, I'm completely out. My parents don't give a shit, but they've been kind of acting weird recently, or maybe I'm just starting to think that they've been acting weird recently. I don't know. I have never ran into anything like this in my life.
Robert Bentley was the family values, Bible thumping, I think even a preacher, governor of Alabama, who had to resign after it came out that he was having an affair with a woman named Rebecca Mason. And the affair was exposed in part because Bentley's text messages were synced with Bentley's then-wife's iPad. And she read all of the steamy text exchanges between her husband and this woman that he also employed in state government and threw a lot of state money at, and it was a huge scandal, and he had to resign. So yeah, sometimes devices sync with computers and iPads sync with computers, and that can out a person. But this isn't outing you. Your parents know you're gay. Your parents know you're sexually active. They don't care. You don't care that they know. If you think they're acting weird because somehow when you were at or near the house, your Manhunt profile synced with their computer in some weird way that you don't understand, and that frankly, I don't understand either. If there's any tech people out there who can let us know how this could have happened, please give us a buzz. It might have something to do with the fact that you cruised Manhunt on their computer, you say. You also mentioned that these were old pictures. Maybe they were downloading automatically to your parents' computer when you were using your parents' computer to cruise on Manhunt. I don't know. Or maybe they all got off your phone somehow if your devices are all synced, if mom and dad are paying for your phone somehow. I don't know, but somebody out there does know. The thing I think you need to do here is directly address it with your parents. If these tiles or icons were on your parents' computer in such a way that you noticed them, I guarantee you, your parents noticed them. All you got to do to them is say, oh God, I'm so sorry. That was embarrassing. I hope it didn't bother you. I deleted them. If any more pop up, let me know. And then obviously we need to do something about our phone or my phone. And when I'm in the house, being sure to turn off Bluetooth or whatever it is that is resulting in this embarrassing sharing between your devices and your parents' computer. But I would address it directly. You spotted them on their computer. I guarantee you, your parents spotted them on your computer as well. Get out in front of it. Y'all may have noticed it's wedding season, and I am getting lots of questions about weddings and the drama that inevitably swirls around them. But none of you have asked me what the best wedding present is. But I'm going to tell you anyway, get those newlyweds or about to be newlyweds some Boll & Branch sheets. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means their sheets and everything else start out super soft and get even softer over time. You buy direct from Boll & Branch, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets, the kind of sheets you want to give as a wedding present, can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. Boll & Branch also only uses sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing, and they donate a portion of every sale to a charity that helps fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. Shipping is free, and you can try them if you want to buy some for yourself. And trust me, you do. You can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a refund. But I doubt you'll even want to send them back. Still, there's no risk, therefore no reason not to give these terrific sheets a try. To get you started, right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com when you use the promo code SAVAGE. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com, promo code SAVAGE. bollandbranch.com. Promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a straight 49-year-old woman in a relationship for 7 years. We have a 6-year-old daughter, and I have a problem I hope you can help me with. I love my partner, but when he pees, he misses at least half the time when I step into the bathroom. We only have one. I step on pee. Our bathroom is not large, and the toilet is close to the door. I've tried to talk with him about it several times, and he says he'll try to not do it, but it continues to happen, and it's really demoralizing to me. I think I'd choose living in different places were we not raising a child together. We're both big fans of yours, and he really respects you. I hope you can help us out here.
The obvious answer here is for him to sit down when he pees. Now, a lot of men don't like to sit when they pee. They've been standing all their lives and spraying everywhere all their lives. And some men find it emasculating because sitting to pee is what women do. And fuck that shit. Men should sit to pee. But there is a thing. There is something that men experience that may leave them disinclined to sit when they pee, even if they don't have any hangups about quote-unquote emasculization. Some men find when they sit to pee that their bladder, their urethra, doesn't fully empty or drain. And then when they stand, more comes out. He could be sitting to pee for all you know, and then standing and more comes out, and that's the pee you're trotting through. There is a middle ground here. He can stand to pee into a jar and then pour that jar into the toilet, fully drain, fully empty his bladder, fully drain his urethra, into a jar, pour it in the toilet, keep a cap for the jar in the bathroom so we can put the cap on it so the jar doesn't end up stinking up the bathroom. But then you have to tolerate the existence of this pee vessel that lives in your bathroom, that maybe sits on the back of the toilet tank. So when it's the middle of the night or first thing in the morning and he wants to take a pee and doesn't want to sit down because he doesn't fully empty when he sits down, he pees into the jar and then pours the jar into the toilet. And I guarantee you his aim will be better when he's pouring the jar out into the toilet than when he's standing up bleary-eyed in the middle of the night attempting to aim his dick at the bowl. OMGS is a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGS interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, psychological techniques, ways of guiding and talking with your partners. The findings, most importantly, this is crucial, the findings are peer-reviewed and published, then brought to life in fun, honest videos with regular women sharing from their own personal experience. Sometimes when it comes to learning about sex, you know, reading a paper published in a journal. It just isn't as effective as hearing someone's story, talking with someone. And what you find at OMG, yes, are people's stories from their own personal experience, but the science is there. They have been reviewed. This stuff is peer reviewed. People's ideas about what works for them have been put to the test scientifically and found to be effective and applicable and replicable, which is really important when it comes to science. And I think really important when it comes to sex. Another great thing about OMGS, you can watch the videos on your own. You can also watch them with your partner, because research has shown that whether you want to discover new ways to build on your own pleasure or pleasure yourself, or find new ways to connect sexually with a partner, OMG Yes has positive effects. IU School of Medicine researchers did a study of OMG Yes users and partners. 95% reported experiencing pleasure in a way that felt new to them physically, and 2/3 of couples had significantly higher feelings of closeness and happiness in their relationship after watching OMG Yes videos. OMG Yes, not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book you keep forever, and your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research. There are dozens of videos and demonstrations in each season of OMG Yes, with detailed information on techniques that you can try tonight. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com, and my listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. I cannot recommend this service highly enough. Go omgyes.com/savage.
Hello, Dan and anyone else. I'm 70, married. My partner supports a non-monogamous relationship as long as it doesn't interfere with her life. DADT is the best description. When I'm dealing with looking for somebody else, I emphasize that the relationship must be based on the sexual, as that's what I'm lacking. The person I have met online is 30, lives in Seattle, but is not here now. She'll be visiting for a while in August and then back in September. Travels a lot, but I don't know the schedule. So met on an online dating site. She sent me enough pictures and some video to make me believe that she is real. I've had many problems with scammers, liars. However, I asked them now for 2 selfies from the same location. I know that's not definitive, but firstly, I would like to know, except for the meeting, is there anything one can do to help with the identity? Is there like a standard way that one deals with identity issue? It seems like they all take offense, even the ones that end up sending me some identity stuff that convinces me. And they find it all pretty tough that I question. Not sure that there's any other way. Anyways, here's another issue. Since we are not to meet for a month, is there any advancement of the sexual realm which makes sense? For example, if this person doesn't like oral or give oral, then this is probably a deal breaker for me. I mean, should I waste a great deal of time getting to know the person without knowing this about them? I guess I can just hope that we are somewhat sexually compatible. But how would you approach this issue? In other words, would you start to talk about your sexual interests or sexual limitations before we meet? Also, of course, there is a campfire issue here with the age difference. Do you have any thoughts on this?
A person can be real and provide you with selfies and provide you with videos and still be a scammer. There is no standard way to deal with identity issues, and I think it is perfectly legitimate for someone who's met a person online that wants to get together with them purely for sex. And while I think it's perfectly legitimate for someone who's met a stranger online who wants to get together for sex to ask for some proof of identity, some people are going to be offended by that. Some people are out there online looking for quasi or nearly or wholly anonymous sex and don't want to give their personal identifying information to the people that they're thinking about sleeping with early on when they don't know that person and don't know if they can trust that person. But you have a right to ask, and they have a right to say no. And if they say no, then you have a right to cut off communication with that person, or if they're really that tempting, continue to communicate with that person in hopes that you'll establish some base level of trust and then they'll give you the information that you'd like to have before meeting up. This particular woman isn't in Seattle, they tell you, and isn't coming to Seattle anytime soon. And you ask me what I would do in that situation, how much of my time I would invest in that person. And the answer is not much. I would tell that person to get in touch with me when they are in town, rather than wasting a lot of time on someone or emotional energy on someone who isn't available, who isn't around. Time and energy and an investment of time and energy that I could be directing elsewhere to someone who's likelier to be available and likelier to exist than this person. You bring up the campsite rule. That's my commandment, that people should leave their partners in better shape than they found them, particularly when their partners are younger or less experienced. As lots of people have pointed out, we should all try to leave our partners in better shape than we found them, regardless of age or experience levels. But your concern here, as a 70-year-old, this 40-year age difference, you're concerned that you should bear the campsite rule in mind, that you shouldn't take advantage of this younger person. My concern listening to your call is that this younger person may be trying to take advantage of you. There are scammers out there online. You have encountered them in the past. And there are scammers on dating sites who are attempting to exploit older people, particularly older men, who are very susceptible, as all men are, to dickful thinking. And the bar has to be higher. You have to scrutinize people, I think, a little bit more thoroughly, particularly when there's this kind of an age gap. Yeah, my worry isn't that you're taking advantage of her. My worry listening to your call is that she might be taking advantage of you. If you continue to speak with her, if you initiate conversations about your sexual interests, if she draws you out and convinces you to send her a bunch of videos or masturbate with her online, are you going to be in a blackmail situation? Is she going to threaten to go to your partner with the things that you've sent her or told her? Is she going to ask you for money to help her get to Seattle? All those things, you know, I wouldn't put the odds at 100%, but they're likelier in this sort of situation. So please interact with her a little bit after you've come. Masturbate and then have a conversation with her. That's when you're most likely to see through a scammer's bullshit or perceive the early warning signs or red flags of a scammer, when you are least likely to be engaged in dickful thinking, which is right after you've come. All that set aside, this woman is not in Seattle and is not going to be in Seattle anytime soon. I would encourage you to tell her to give you a shout, drop you a text when she's coming to town, and in the meantime, direct your attentions elsewhere, perhaps to some women who are a little closer to your age and therefore a little less likely to be scamming you or trying to leverage your dickful thinking against your better judgment. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by Honey. Honey is a free browser extension that scans the web for coupon codes and discounts while you shop online. Honey automatically applies the biggest savings to your cart at checkout like magic. It works on over 20,000 sites like Amazon, Nordstrom, J.Crew, Nike, Best Buy, Target, Macy's, and more. It takes no effort to install, just two clicks, and you will start saving anytime you shop online. Here's what some users have to say. They call it Honey because of all them sweet deals. And I totally thought Honey was a scam, but I just got $300 worth of bathing suits for $180. You might think that all sounds too good to be true, like it's free and it saves you money. So what's the catch? It's pretty simple, actually. When you use a coupon code provided by Honey, they earn a small commission from the merchant and they pass along some of the savings to their members. So it is a win-win for everybody. There's really no reason not to use Honey. It's free to use and easy to install on your computer, again, in just two clicks. Don't take it from me. Take it from our listeners. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/savage. That's joinhoney.com/savage. Honey, online savings simplified.
Hi, Dan, a 30-year-old woman calling about a friend. She's dating a guy who started out as like kind of her boss. He is much older than her. She's about 29. He is 65 at a low estimate. And I'm just wondering if I have any business saying anything to her about my concerns about the relationship. She's been through some shit lately. She got divorced, and I have a feeling that she kind of took up with this older guy as a way to get out of the house and not have to deal with her husband during the divorce. But, you know, seems to be kind of sticking with it. The other thing that really worries me is that since she started seeing him, I don't hear from her. She dodges plans. You know, when I run into her in person, she acts friendly like everything's normal and says she wants to hang out. But then when I text her or call her and try to get her to make plans, she won't commit or she won't answer. Yeah, I mean, it just worries me, but I also am worried that I'm just being judgmental and, you know, maybe she really likes him. Maybe they click, but I don't get it. You know, I just ran into them and I don't know. I just don't get it. So tell me if I'm being a dick, or if not, you know, how do I talk to her?
I'm writing this call right after the previous call to show that, yeah, there are actually some 29, 30-something folks out there who are attracted to people 65 and up for reasons. Your friend, caller in particular, seems to have her reasons. She was in a shitty relationship. She's getting a divorce. She's still living at home with her husband. And this guy, unfortunately her boss, which adds a layer of squick, this guy got her out of the house and was giving her pleasure and making her feel better about herself. And there's no risk here with this 70-something dude of anything long-ass term coming from this relationship. And maybe that's why your friend was drawn to this guy. Also, the transgressiveness of it. Maybe she's attracted to older guys. All things that only your friend would know and be able to tell you. So I promise you that your feelings of discomfort, your friend has picked up on those. And she may be dodging you because she fears the conversation that you want to have with her. So I would, if I were in your shoes, send her a text saying, hey, I love you. I miss you. I'd love to get together. Is there a reason why when I run into you in public, we're friendly and we say, let's meet up. But when I ask you to meet up, you can't. If you're afraid I'm going to judge you about the relationship you're in right now, I won't. I just want to hear about your relationship and why this is the right relationship for you at the moment and why this works for you and what's great about this guy if you really like this guy. And I will love and support you in your intergenerational relationship, but you got to let me in so I can do that loving and supporting. But as your friend, if there's a problem here, if you're not enjoying this relationship, if you're being isolated by this guy, those are red flags, and I am concerned. But if this guy ain't isolating you, if you're isolating yourself from me for fear of being judged by me, I promise you, I won't judge. I just want to listen. Send her that epic text, and I think you'll hear from her.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and Youth, 25-year-old straight cis female from the Sunshine State. In episode 661, you told a caller to be upfront about being a bottom in order to stop being mistaken for a top. My problem is, even though I'm upfront about being submissive in the bedroom, my strong personality often has guys acting less dominant around me. I also find that guys will say during conversation that they're kinky and enjoy being a top, but when it comes to hooking up, they're very vanilla. Dan, what else can I do? I'm already telling them I'm into kink and I'm submissive. Am I just getting hit with a string of liars?
Did you get hit with a string of liars? I don't know. You might have gotten hit with a string of guys who told you what they thought you wanted to hear or needed to hear to get into bed with you. I guess that would be a string of liars. You also might have gone to bed with a few guys who enjoy kinky sex, who enjoy being aggressive, who see themselves as tops, who were nervous or lost their nerve, or as I think good tops are told, they wanted to take it very slowly and move gradually in that direction and not bust out a lot of aggressive moves right out of the gate without a lot of negotiation. You say that you identify as kinky. You say you identify as submissive. You say you're seeking out tops. You don't say anything else. What does that mean when you say you're kinky and submissive? What else? That's the beginning of the conversation about your sexual interests. Do you like to have your ass slapped? Do you like to have your hair pulled? Do you like to be tied up? Do you like a hand placed dramatically near your throat? Please no choking. It is dangerous. What do you mean by that? I am submissive. I am kinky. That doesn't actually tell someone everything they might need to know to provide you with the sexual experience that you're longing for. So before you write these guys off as liars, I would urge you to communicate with these guys a bit more. That was fun. The sex was okay. It was kind of a little bit more vanilla than I expected based on our conversation. So I think we need to have a bit more conversation if we're going to hook up again, because these are my expectations. These are the things that turn me on. I thought I was clear about that, but I'm willing to listen to you. And if I wasn't clear about it, let's get clear about it. And then see what happens. If the guy says, I'm actually not into kinky sex, which I think they're unlikely to say, liar. If the guy says I was nervous, tops are allowed to be nervous. Tops are allowed to be hesitant. You know, when it comes to BDSM, when it comes to kinky sex, we talk about how important it is to establish trust, but not just for the bottom. It's important to establish trust also for the top. Maybe these guys weren't there yet or didn't feel that level of trust with you yet. Not that you had done anything wrong. They just weren't there yet. Maybe they were just feeling tentative, and that's what you were picking up on when you two fucked. It wasn't that they were liars. It wasn't that they were vanilla. They were just nervous. Give them a call, and maybe, if it feels right, give them another chance.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a 30-something living in the mid-Atlantic, and I just have a quick question on how to handle aging parents. So both of my parents are getting up there in age. My dad is pushing 80. My mom is in her 60s. And both of them, as they've gotten older, have become more and more bitter and jaded, and it's made it very difficult to talk to them. To make things more complicated, my dad has really bought into Fox News and the Trump culture, and you know, he's becoming more racist by the year. So my question is not how I can change them. That's not going to change. They are who they are, and it's a natural part of aging. My question is, how do I handle it? Because it makes it very hard to be around them.
I'm getting up there myself, so I really hate to think that becoming a racist, bitter, Trump-supporting, Fox News-watching piece of shit is a natural part of aging. That's opt-in shit, and I think it's the result of a lot of older people in our culture and our society isolating themselves, or the culture built in such a way as to isolate older people. Older people wind up moving away, wind up in nursing homes or retirement communities surrounded by other old people, don't typically live in diverse areas, diverse neighborhoods. It has been my experience of old people in Seattle, where I have lived for decades, that they're not assholes and racists and Trump-supporting pieces of shit. It is my impression, because I don't spend a lot of time out in the boonies, that more isolated older people who are surrounded by cows or other older people watch a lot of Fox News and grow more racist and more bitter as they become more isolated. So maybe the way to fight this is cultural and generational, and we need to build a culture that doesn't isolate old people from young people. Maybe then we'll have fewer racist, bitter, Trump-supporting, Fox News-watching old people on our hands. But as to the problem of your parents, tell them. Urging a lot of people today to have conversations, sometimes difficult conversations. I understand that difficult conversations are called difficult conversations because they're fucking difficult. But you can say to your parents, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about Trump. I don't want to talk about race. I don't want to listen to you two say racist, bitter shit. And then leave. You can train them like the animals that they are, that we all are. If they start saying this stuff, get up and go. Say, I am done. Give me a call when you guys are in a better mood. Give me a call when you want to talk about something else. If you're talking to them on the phone, you can say, I'm hanging up now, Dad, because I don't want to listen to you say those racist, horrible, untrue things about other Americans or about immigrants or about black people or about the squad or whatever else, and hang up your phone. Just like the gay kids who come out to their parents as teenagers and they have to bring their parents around, your only leverage over your parents as an adult is your presence. And if your parents are doing or saying hateful things about you, don't make yourself present. If they're doing or saying hateful things about other people and you are offended on behalf of those other people, or it's just unpleasant for you to listen to them go off like this, don't make yourself present. But tell them that's what you're doing. Tell your father, all right, Dad, I am on my feet and I am out of this restaurant because I am not going to listen to this. If you want to talk about something else, I will stay and I will sit and we can chat. If you want to talk about this shit, I'm out. Be firm and be consistent. And if they can't knock it the fuck off, spend less time with them, spend less time engaging with them, talk with them less. Make it clear to them that they can have more of their daughter in their lives, or they can pop off with racist, bitter Fox News horseshit, but they're going to have to make a choice.
Hey, I have a question about being discreet about having multiple lovers when you're staying with your parents. So here's my situation. I live in Chicago. My mother lives in Boston. I am from Boston. I go home to Boston a couple times every year to visit, and I always stay with my mom because I usually stay with her because I am super broke and I don't have money for a hotel or even an Airbnb. I have stayed with friends occasionally, but I only have one, maybe two friends I could stay with, so I can't stay every time because I would outstay my welcome. So I have connected with a lovely couple in Boston, and we have had fun rendezvous the last couple times I've visited Boston. And I have stayed with a friend during that time, and that wasn't an issue. But this time I'm going to go home in a couple weeks, and I will be staying with my mom again due to financial constraints. Now, my mom is supportive of my identity as lesbian. She's very on board with that. She's come around to the idea that I am having sex at all. I have a girlfriend of 2 years, so she's okay with all that. I think she's a little iffy about the sex because I'm not married, but she's okay with it and supports my relationship. But she would not at all be okay if she knew we were non-monogamous. And I don't know. I really want to see this couple again because they're very lovely people. I really have a fun time with them. And it's like my little home away from home that I can go to when I'm visiting. I still have some beautiful lovers there waiting for me. So what can I do? Staying overnight seems tricky without lying. And not staying overnight, I could just go and hang out and say I'm hanging out with friends. That's possible. But my mom is a bit of a helicopter mother. So I'm just afraid of not being able to lie enough to cover it up.
Stay overnight and lie. Run your parents on a need-to-know basis. You can come close to the truth. You could even introduce your mother to this lovely couple that you've befriended in Boston and let your mother know that, you know, every once in a while you crash at their place. You'd like to go see the movies and maybe have a drink, and then they have a guest room and you're going to stay there because you don't want to drive home. You don't want to have to traverse the city, or maybe you want to give mom a break. You can tell mom anything. You don't have to tell mom you're fucking this couple. You can allow your mother to assume what you allow probably your neighbors to assume or your coworkers to assume, that you are monogamous. That's the default assumption. Social monogamy, they call it, socially monogamous. You are not sexually monogamous. Your lovers need to know that. Your friends need to know that. Some people are out about being sexually non-monogamous, even if they are socially monogamous, even if they're pair bonded with one person, they're completely out. But most people, particularly most straight people, aren't. And you aren't obligated to be. I think it would be better if everyone who was sexually non-monogamous was open about it myself. But parents are judgy and people are shitty and there are no anti-discrimination protections in place for people who have open or poly relationships. And it can be a risk. So not everybody who can be is. So not everybody who would even want to be can be. But we're talking here about your mother, and your mother doesn't need to know the details of your sex life. Tell your mom you're staying at friends. You could even introduce your mom again to these friends and come close to telling the truth. So long as your friends don't start pawing at you or making out with you in front of your mother is not going to leap to the assumption that you're fucking these people. Stay overnight and don't think of it as lying to your mother. As my mom, Judy Savage, liked to say to me frequently, there are things a mother has a right not to know. This, for your mother, is definitely one of those things. All right, before we get to your response call, let's read some of your tweets. The Fourth Foster tweets, you know, people use the term dodging a bullet when it comes to getting out of a relationship. Hey, Dan Savage, could it also be sometimes that you get shot and now you're finally having the bullet removed? Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Yes, you could see it that way. Stu Watkins tweets, I work in EMS, not in the US, and I got a call at a BDSM play place. I've never been to one personally or professionally, so I was surprised at first. If I wasn't a Savage Lovecast listener, I wouldn't have been able to appropriately educate my coworkers. Thank you, Dan Savage. Thank you, Stu, for writing in, and thank you for doing what you do. And finally, Diana Edelman tweets, the only podcast that uses the words Twitterfication and Baroque in the same episode. And today, Risible. I love Dan Savage. I love you too, Diana. I do use all of those words, and sometimes I even manage to pronounce them all correctly. And now your response calls.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling about the woman in the most recent episode who was getting triggered into like a panic attack because she and her husband were trying some bondage. And I wanted to say that they maybe need to just start slow. You know, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. He can tie just one hand behind her back, or maybe just tie her feet together and leave her hands free and kind of go slow and work up to, you know, times where she really can't move or free herself. And the other thing, and I'm so surprised you didn't say this because I've heard you say it to so many people, is instead of using rope or sheets or whatever else they have around, they should maybe invest in some cuffs, because those, once you're in them, they come off in a click. Instead of having to untie, and if she's panicking, it might be a lot more safe. Go slow and just make it playful and fun. He could even tell her to not move her hands and not tie them, and it could be like a mental bondage game. And then she doesn't even have to have anything that she can't get out of. She just has to be willing to do it. That sounds like it could also be fun.
Hi, I'm calling about the caller in episode 665 who was experiencing like some claustrophobia and exploring bondage play with her partner. One thing that might be fun for her to try is you can actually pretend perhaps that he's like hypnotizing you, and maybe he's hypnotically suggesting you to tie yourself up, or only like asking you to pretend that you are bound when you're not actually bound. So you could engage in something like that without needing to be bound, or by binding yourself, which you might be more comfortable with. And it can be kind of sexy and fun and pretend.
Hi, Dan. Since you know your Bible pretty well, this might not be news for you, but in preparation for your 666 show, I wanted to make sure that you knew that biblical scholars agree that 666 is not actually the number of the devil. It's mentioned in the book of Revelation, which any intelligent person reads contextually and not literally. There's mention of a number of beasts throughout the book. The beasts are really like political cartoons. Some of them are predatory, and that's meant to represent the Romans' military conquest. Anyway, at one point, the author says that the number of the beast is 666. People who read the Bible literally see that and think, oh, it's the devil. But there was an ancient practice called gematria, and what they did was they equated letters with numerical values, and it was like a riddle to be able to speak in code. The letters for Nero Caesar added up to 666. It was a way of talking about the corrupt leaders of the day in secret. So maybe 2,000 years from now, if there still is a civilization, people will find your ITMFA merch and think that it symbolizes the devil.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. The deadline is right around the corner to submit your film for my Dirty Little Film Festival Hump. You have a chance to win a part of $20,000 in cash prizes if your film makes it into the festival, and a cut of every single ticket sold on the Hump tour if your film goes out on tour with the festivals. Your films that you submit to Hump can be hardcore, softcore, live action, animated, kinky, vanilla, gay, lesbian, trans, straight, all sexual expressions and gender identities are welcome at Hump. The deadline to submit is September 13th. Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out more. Follow Lucian Greaves on Twitter at Lucian Greaves, and check out Hail Satan, which is now streaming. Follow Carrie Wade Gervin on Twitter at Carrie Gervin, and you can find her piece on Representative Bill Sanderson at carriegervin.substack.com. You should also be following me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.